Thanks for joining us. Today I am joined by Vivek Dhar, who is the CBA's Chief Commodities Strategist. In previous conversations, we've discussed the dynamics for iron ore and industrial metals. In this conversation, we will be talking about the energy complex. And Viv, again, this has been an extraordinary space over the course of the last 12 months. We have seen most recently a bit of a run-up for energy prices in anticipation of increased Chinese activity, but in the last little while they've pulled back quite a bit. The threat of a recession is quite real where energy prices are concerned.
That's right. Like, look, oil has probably been the least volatile in the energy space so far. Like, yes, it's given up gains, particularly because of the banking crisis, as you know, global growth fears have come through. And that's, you know, some of that has come back. So we have seen oil come back up and getting close to that $80 barrel mark, you know, which is where it was before this banking crisis really all started. But in terms of where the volatility has been, it is 100% has been on thermal coal and LNG spot prices. We are down from its peak in August last year, more than 80% for LNG spot and over 60% for thermal coal. So the power markets, or the commodities that feed the power market, they have certainly adjusted lower because the fear of energy shortages, particularly in Europe, have subsided. Yeah. You know, and there are two key reasons for that. Like, one is they've had a warmer than expected winter.
They've been very fortunate.
Very fortunate, right? So that has meant their demand has been a lot less than seasonally is the case. The other factor has been demand destruction. Yeah. The prices have been very high. And because they've been high, you know, we're seeing almost demand destruction of 15% relative to the five-year average.
So, which is unheard of.
So it just tells you the impact of high prices. It has impacted demand, particularly on the industrial side. But those are the factors that have meant that they have enough energy.
Yeah.
You know, to put one number out there to indicate just how much, if you look at the gas storage levels, it's currently tracking around 55% of their capacity. Typically for this time of year, we're talking 35%. So they are in such a good position to deal with any energy shortfall risk, and prices have moved considerably lower to reflect that.
Yeah.
But the one thing I'd say to put it all in context, yes, we saw a massive run up to August, September last year, and then obviously down to levels we are now. But compared to levels 2 years ago, we're still higher.
Yeah.
So it just puts into context that yes, you know, sequentially, this is disinflationary. But compared to 2 years ago, it still is inflationary.
Quite inflationary. So I suppose the interesting thing within that dynamic is that where oil prices are concerned, most recently there have been concerns about security in the Middle East. In relation to ports in Turkey are a problem as we speak right now. But then at the same time, you know, the US has released quite a lot of supplies from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, for example, and they've spoken about a level where they would like to start refilling the reserve. Does that tend to put a floor under oil prices in particular, and then as a result, the rest of the energy complex?
Yeah, look, for oil, I think the WTI, so the US benchmark, you know, yes, if that drops below 70, could we see more U.S. buying to fill up those strategic reserves?
Because I think that's where the energy secretary said $70 a barrel is where we're going to be filling up.
Exactly. And so then that does act as in the near term and, you know, a gauge of like where is a floor, right? But I would say that going beyond that, because I think that's more a secondary driver, it's going to be a story about supply and potential disruptions.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that in December, we saw EU sanctions come through on Russian oil exports.
Yeah.
Now that affects about 0.7% of global supply of oil. And then in February, we saw similar sanctions come in for Russian effectively diesel exports.
Yeah.
And that's about 1% of global supply. How those trade flows manage to work out is going to be critical in terms of this near-term market having enough supply. It looks like the oil side can adjust, right? Because we've seen India really come in as the incremental buyer of Russian oil, but diesel is less clear, right? That there is no real natural buyer. And that could be a catalyst for a tighter market because we get short diesel. Yep. You know, and these are just, right now it doesn't look like there's that issue, but it's really been masked by, you know, the banking crisis and global growth concerns. But those factors are the ones I'd watch for, because once you see Russian supply getting hurt, we could see Russia even add to the disruption by weaponizing their oil exports.
They've got no interest in making this any easier, apart from their Indian and Chinese bias, perhaps.
Yeah, and that's the issue, is that if you look at last year, say gas was used as
a substitute, as
basically a weapon for Russia.
Yeah.
And here, could they do it with oil? And you know, you have potentially another 1.5 to 2% of global supply that they could disrupt actively in order to cause markets to have a supply disruption and prices to spike. So, you know, there's a lot to consider in this, and that's why we have upside risks to our view on oil.
Yeah.
Like, we are calling for $80 to $90 a barrel by the end. So going from 80 to 90,
yeah,
and then hitting a peak of about 100 in the middle of next year. And, you know, Chinese demand is a big story, but a lack of supply response is also a very significant factor, that US oil supply isn't growing aggressively, and Saudi and UAE and the rest of OPEC outside of Russia aren't interested in boosting supply significantly. So you have this scenario playing out of the market tightening, and that's our base case view. The question that will lead to potentially higher prices than what we have is, what does Russia do with their oil? And if
a shallower recession, for example, globally, that would play into that picture as
Yeah, but it's like, yeah. And so if we do see massive growth issues as well, like global growth falls, and then oil will respond to that.
Yeah.
But once again, this is the difference between, say, a banking crisis, major recession, and a vanilla recession based on just higher interest rates. And these are the two worlds we're contending with as we speak, because, you know, we've now had a flavor of financial stability risks. And
that's happened in a short space of time, and people are probably still sort of running around trying to get their arms around what the parameters of this might look like.
Exactly. And I think that's really critical right now. But when it comes to thermal coal, I'd say watch what happens with gas prices.
Right.
Because that'll probably set what happens with thermal coal. They're both interlinked in the power market, in that, you know, where one can't be used, the other can be a substitute.
Yep.
And so they'll follow each other. And so even though, like, we think LNG prices are bottoming, we actually think it will probably rise before winter next, or the next northern winter, because the market will look to see whether it has enough supply. Because keep in mind that European and Chinese LNG imports have to lift, right, this year. And that's even taking into account demand destruction in Europe, because they just don't have much of Russian pipeline imports anymore.
And their inventories, what capacity do they have for?
Oh, they'll be comfortable, but they'll still have to see the imports rise, right? And if you put the Chinese recovery from last year, the question is there enough new LNG supply to meet this incremental demand? And that's why we can see the market potentially tightening.
Yeah.
But once again, very weather dependent. And so hence,
we've become meteorologists now.
Exactly. So then the next winter period, you'll have those concerns rise. And we think as LNG spot gets to those $15 and MMBTU level, that's when thermal coal will have reason to rise as well. So, you know, if you're looking at thermal coal markets, I'd say look at the dynamics in gas, because I think that's dictating terms.
And so when's that moment in the calendar where you start to look at it as being critical in terms of understanding, you know, where things are going to pivot for the next 6 months? Because that warmer winter in Europe was understood quite early on in the piece.
I'd say August, September.
Right.
I'd say that's probably the timing when you'll know whether you have enough or not, right? Like, that's probably and that's when the market really cried out last year. And I'd say you'd have a similar view. Like, it's not going to be as bad just given where we are storage-wise already.
Yeah.
But it's just, that's the point where the market will kind of take a favorable view to see what's going to happen. But, you know, we can't see prices, like, the risk of prices going further lower from here is less in our view than going up, right? Just simply because we have opportunistic buying at, you know, the $9 to $13
the risk is level. It's better to be long than not.
From the South Asian buyers, particularly like the price sensitive ones, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Thailand, we're seeing them come into the market. So that's probably where I'd say there's a price floor probably going to form. But yeah, we're looking at that space very carefully just to see its impact on global energy prices.
Such an interesting window of time as far as the next 6 months are concerned, Viv. And thanks very much for giving us some valuable pointers on how to navigate that window. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
And thanks very much for joining us for this iteration of the Executive Series, where we've been talking about commodity prices.